Before we get started, a quick disclosure. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Nothing you hear is an offer or a solicitation to buy or sell any investment. Hello and welcome to the Rangeley Capital Podcast. In one of the top two most surprising and even unsettling changes of power this month, this is Chris DeMuth hosting, having seized the microphone from my colleague Andrew Walker, who joins me today. It is Wednesday, January 4th, 2017, and today is our first podcast of the new year. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And we are going to talk about Apple's new bet and Jack in the Box's tacos. I don't know that they're new tacos, but tacos.
They're definitely not new tacos.
Which, according to one diner quoted by the Wall Street Journal, are vile and amazing, both at the same time. So to start with, to kick it off for the new year, Apple is investing $1 billion. Chump change for Apple, which is a $620 billion company, but still a very interesting investment. And a lot of money for most other people, including me. But they're putting $1 billion in SoftBank's new tech fund. And just wanted to start to see this is interesting news to me. But why are they doing this?
Yeah, so look, there's a lot of things going on here. I want to dive into SoftBank. I want to dive into the $100 billion tech fund. But you asked, so let's answer. Why is Apple investing into the $100 billion SoftBank fund? And I think the answer really is, look, Apple's got $290 billion. I think something like $200 billion of it is offshore, where it'd be subject to a repatriation tax. They said they made a $1 billion investment in Didi, the Chinese Uber, a couple months ago, and they said, don't expect us to do anything like this going forward, and then they do this. Mm-hmm. I think they really did the calculus and said, hey, we take this $1 billion, we invest it in this fund, we've got a deep relationship with SoftBank. It's really about buying political capital with SoftBank and other tech companies and everything, and we can use money that we otherwise couldn't access and use to do that. So I really think it's the political capital aspect that Apple's doing it, not necessarily a fantastic return on investment.
That makes sense to me. I think Tim Cook is more willing to partner than Steve Jobs was. And they're in a bit of a hole politically in the U.S. Just 1 year ago, the president-elect was tweeting that we should boycott Apple, although he quickly returned to his Apple computer after saying that. But Masayoshi's son, the head of SoftBank, is brilliant in many ways, including finding tech candidates, but also he's pretty politically savvy, and I think he is probably one of the first people to really figure out how to handle the new American political environment. And so ironically, you have this American company turning to a Japanese company to handle America.
Yeah, but let's talk about the fund, because this is a $100 billion fund, which I think you're exactly right. He raises this $50 billion, $100 billion fund and promises Donald Trump, I'm going to invest and create, I think it's 50,000 jobs. Is that the right number? I'm going to invest and create 50,000 jobs. And this is what Donald Trump wants, right? He wants big, flashy headlines. I don't think he cares about the logic or the logic or anything behind it. But this is a staggering number that I guarantee you cannot be invested into startups. The entire venture capital industry last year, I believe, invested roughly $75 billion. So $50 billion, even if it's spread out over 5 years, $10 billion a year, it's so massive they can't find the startups to do it. And the law of diminishing returns says even if they did, just because you throw another $1 billion out there doesn't mean there's going to be better code or better apps, right? This is a very well-funded industry. I think they're going to have to either say, oh yeah, we're doing it because we're investing another $10 billion into an Uber or something, or find some other ways around it, because it's just too big to find startups to put it into.
If you look at the money behind it, the backer is not just SoftBank and now Apple, but also the Middle Eastern sovereign wealth funds, notably the largest being a $45 billion ticket from the Saudis, although there'll be others from Qatar and Emirates. I think the idea that some part of this is a protection racket politically would make sense. Yeah, if you're gonna do $1 billion tickets, you have to come up with your 100th favorite startup idea, and it's just not gonna be that promising.
It's not even your 100th favorite. I mean, look, the big startups now, they're in general, they scale really quickly, right? Like Facebook, to get off the ground, did not require $1 billion. You're going to have to put it into your 10,000th favorite startup idea if you're going to do this.
Yeah.
You want to talk about SoftBank a little bit?
Sure. SoftBank, a fascinating company. Masayoshi-san was an early backer of some remarkable companies such as Alibaba. He has a good relationship with Apple. Amazingly enough, a fairly well-known story. He was somebody who early had sketched out iPhone drawings, but in the process ended up kind of cornering the market for iPhone telecom in Japan. He kind of took that idea to Steve Jobs as a representative of somebody who could handle the market in Japan, but he convinced on the Japanese side that he could handle Steve Jobs, so he kind of ended up right in the middle of this.
So the story, he went to Steve Jobs, and exactly what you're saying, he had a picture and he drew like an iPod at the time that was also a phone, and he said, hey, why don't you make this? And Steve Jobs said, we're going to do that. And he said, okay, if you're going to, Masayoshi-san said, okay, if you're going to do that, why don't you let me distribute in Japan? Steve Jobs said, you don't even have a telecom. And he said, that's not a problem. I'll get a telecom. You've got my word. Just let me distribute it. And it was great.
Yeah. So, he's an incredibly audacious, incredibly charismatic, brilliant person.
But look, just that alone would have been the investment of a lifetime, yeah. Right? Locking. But then he invested in Supercell, the game company, and that was he ended up selling it to, I believe, Tencent for $9 or $10 billion. He was an early investor in Alibaba. Just those two investments alone would have been the investments of a lifetime. But I do think, like, he recently bought ARM Holdings, which is a semiconductor. They kind of license IP for semiconductors for $32 billion. And he said it's part of his 300-year plan, which I get long-term planning, and you can have an advantage long-term planning. But if you're... if you're planning for 300 years or even 30 years in the future, I just don't think there's anyone who can see, more than 10 years into the future to be able to make these sort of investments. What do you think?
No, I think if you look at a lot of long-term value investors in the West, like Warren Buffett, might shy away from tech precisely for that reason. I mean, with the change of the year, I saw some kind of charming and interesting descriptions of what the world was like 100 years ago. And the idea that you could predict a lot of the changes in those increments, it's a fun mental game, but he would be as good as anybody at coming up with a credible answer, but I would say it's impossible.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. If in 1910 somebody had asked you what the best investment was going to be for the next 100 years, you probably would have said railroads, yeah. I would guess, or cars. And obviously, in either case, you probably would have been wrong, and B, you have to pick the winner. Like, I can't imagine investing in something in that. And like, who's to say chips are what's going to power everything in 100 years? Or I don't know. It's too long to me. And it's one of those silly things people like to brag about that I just think it's impossible. It's impossible.
The last thing before switching over to our second big topic from today, I'd throw out on Masa-san is that he was a world-class bluffer in a sense, dealing with Steve Jobs. I think he can recognize world-class bluffers as well. He recently met with the president-elect in the U.S., And there's been a number of these instances of people walking into Trump meetings without folders, so people in the press with high-def cameras can quickly see what the papers say. And he notably close to Foxconn, the company that does the manufacturing in Asia for Apple, for the iPhone in particular, but he had kind of stationery and papers from Foxconn. So it's possible that he has some plan to bridge the Trumpian bring manufacturing back to the U.S., which in many cases is impractical, with an actual idea of something they can do. And there might be some savvy answers. Apple prominently has designed in California, which I think is kind of an elegant bit of Americana, although they're clearly assembled in Asia. And Masa-san might have some idea here on how to handle this.
So Foxconn, I was telling you earlier, in Brazil, I believe they passed a law that said all smartphones must be put together in Brazil. So Foxconn was just like, okay, no problem. We'll still make everything in China. And then they just ship like one or two modules over to Brazil, where they ship the modules over to Brazil. Brazil puts the two modules together and boom, working smartphone. So if Donald Trump wants an iPhone assembled in the USA, I'm sure they're willing to do it. It's just a question of, how much are we willing to pay? You know, that cost has to be passed on to someone. It's going to get passed on to consumers. If you want all of it made in the USA, it can be, but then we're going to pay $2,000 for an iPhone. So
exactly. Yeah. Right. I mean, when the politics starts being injected in how the supply chain works, the costs go to the consumers, but also the counterfactual is very hard to judge. You know, in this carrier deal recently, it's very hard to measure the job impact because they were otherwise going to leave the U.S., but the money that they were paid, if there's a word that's slightly nicer than bribe, but the money that they were paid off to keep in the U.S., they're going to spend on automation. So it's not clear there's really a net job impact if you look at all of the impact. Anything else that we should talk about Apple, or can we move on to Jack in the Box?
I'm happy to go to Jack in the Box.
Well, it's time to discuss tacos. So a piece in the journal caught our attention with some really wonderful quotes. I'll tick off before handing over to you the topic of Jack in the Box and their tacos. But this is really interesting. They said that over half a billion of these tacos are consumed in the U.S. If you have not had one, the description, and these descriptions, I believe, are all by people who voluntarily bought and ate them, fans. And it was stale, greasy, spicy, crunchy, saucy, and just plain strange. I was like, I must have more. This is vile and amazing. And the other comment that once you pull it out of the sleeve, it's important to not look at it too carefully before you should eat it. You should just kind of remove the covering and then eat it right away without thinking about it too much.
I think my favorite was, there was one from a girl and she's like, yeah, I went and I ordered it. I was going through and I kind of ordered it because it was 2 for 99 cents. And I took a bite and was like, oh, this is disgusting, and threw it on the seat of the car seat next to me. And then it, like 30 seconds later, I started looking at it and slowly grabbed it and just like woofed the whole thing down. It's like, it almost feels like someone's describing like a drug or heroin or something. It's so bad, but it's so good.
Well, speaking of drugs, I think this would be a pretty good kind of marijuana legalization trade, that I think if you were completely sober and completely clean, the attractiveness of this would be substantially lower than if you were not. The serious question I wanted to ask you is the price. These are 2 for 99 cents.
Mm-hmm.
So this is slightly less than half a dollar for an animal-based product. We are price-sensitive value investors, but when is price more of a data point than an opportunity? And might this be that case?
Yes, I think it is. But it's such a great question. You know, like, you go to a dentist and a dentist says, oh, yeah, $1,000 for a root canal. And you go to the guy across the street and he says, $950. And then you go to the third guy and he says, $10. It's kind of like that $10. You're probably not going to want to spend that. You know, I don't know. It's so difficult. It's one of those things. If something is too good to be true, it probably is. You know, we talk about this a lot with kind of being debunkers. I see it's year end and you see a lot of people who tweet like, last year our trade recommendations were up 170%. It's like, well, maybe, but they probably weren't, because if they were, you'd probably be keeping them to yourselves because you'd be rich in a very short amount of time if you could compound money that quickly. Obviously, these tacos are getting sold, but kind of the processing behind them is probably too good to be true to be actual tacos.
The way I think about it, whenever something seems too cheap, which for me, I struggle even to say those words next to each other, I think the cheaper the better, relative to the value. The bigger the discount, the better. But when it's tiny, you know, geez, you should not rely on precision. You should rely on underpaying. But when it gets to be ridiculous, especially if there's not a good explanation for why should the value be hidden there, you should just go back to your premises, re-examine your premises, just double, triple, quadruple, quintuple your work. And maybe you found something amazing, but to be very careful.
I think it's also one of those things. Look, how big is the downside? And, you know, if you're getting work on your tooth done or you're putting something into your body, the downside is actually pretty large. So generally, you probably don't want to deviate too far outside the kind of accepted price norms. But if it's not something mission critical, you know, be that what it is. If you're buying a shirt and you see a shirt for a dollar, like, what's the worst that can happen if you buy a shirt for a dollar instead of $10? You might as well take a chance. Did you ever hear the story about the TGI Fridays all-you-can-eat appetizers?
No.
Okay, so TGI Fridays, we're just going way off course here.
Okay.
TGI Fridays did an all-you-can-eat appetizer for $10, all-you-can-eat appetizers. And it kind of reminded me of you because some writer told their boss about it and it was like, I think I'm going to go and try and eat 100 mozzarella sticks. And their boss was like, if you go do that, you can have like an entire week off or something. And they did it and they were not happy with themselves.
It's hard sometimes when the metrics get confusing because you have the whole money-saving metrics, but then you have the whole health and ability to... But
we've got
to
mention the guy who ate... Absolutely.
No, I'll leave it to you, but we have to... speaking of food-eating contests, there was somebody who did endeavor to eat 50 of the Jack in the Box beef tacos. How did that go?
So he said he was going to eat 50, and then he did, after he bought him, he realized, he's like, oh my God, this is, it was almost 10 pounds worth of food. But my two favorite parts of it are he got to 42 of them, which is incredible. That's like 7 or 8 pounds of food. And he's like, yeah, I still love them, still eat them all the time.
Which, and to remind everybody, I mean, this is, the whole thing is fried after the basic tacos put together, and then they just stick a thing of American cheese in there, which, the definition of American cheese is just bad cheddar cheese. I mean, it's not like a separate category. It's not even really a dairy product. So, anyways, I was going to ask you, did you have any disclosure that you needed to say on any of these?
We should disclose that we got so excited about the Jack in the Box tacos that we ate tacos for dinner before this podcast.
We did that. We did not find... I was going to send somebody out to get Jack in the Box tacos. Apparently, there's none in this area.
I think our New Year's resolution should be we should try a Jack in the Box taco at some point this year.
I think we should.
Excellent.
If you like this podcast, please be sure to follow and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or Audioboom. And I was just, for my disclosure, I needed a time limit because people aren't going to want to hear this whole thing, but I'm going to get as many ingredients as I can disclose out before the end of the podcast.
three seconds. I'm just going to end it.
Oh dear, this is pressure.
Here we go.
Beef, water, textured vegetable
protein. Done. Talk to you guys soon.